what does a successful season look like for Montez Sweat to you?
I'm going to set the standard high. I need you to be top 10 in pressures, and I need you to have double-digit sacks. I'm paying you top 10 edge rusher money. I need you to have top 10 edge rusher production. And if you don't, then hit the bricks. Sorry.
Bet on Bears fans. Another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Shea, summer is officially here.
Yeah,
NBA
love it.
Season ended yesterday. We are baseballed out right now. A little rivalry going here.
Now listen, I've been baseballed out. Pod. I've been baseballed out since March.
Your team's good, so it makes sense.
I'm also I'm an NFL MLB elitist. It's the sports I care by far the most about. So I'm always baseballed out.
I love baseball. It's so weird. Like I probably watch more baseball sport-wide than any other sport outside of football.
Is that just a purely volume thing because it's on every day and there's 162 games?
Could be that, but it's just, I have to have sports in the background.
Yeah, I get
that. So, like, if I'm walking around, I got the MLB app, too. So, like, I'll cut on I was watching the Athletics-Orioles game yesterday. Real barn burner.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I was waiting for the Dodgers game to start.
That's basically. Even a little rough for me. I don't know if I'm tuning in.
I needed noise while I was grilling this weekend. But we got a lot to get to on today's show. I want to talk about this defensive line. You've been very not bought in on the D-line, which I think is not – a confusing stance to take. I understand some of the additions made, but I think there's one position that most Bears fans thought was going to happen, and it just didn't happen for the Chicago Bears this offseason. So really want to talk about kind of where we are, breaking this down positionally. You brought this up last week, the going through each position group and breaking these players down. Yeah. So I want to do that today. I do bring you a question to start the show, though, Shea Norling. But first, we do want to let you guys know Chicago Bears podcast brought to you by the Advantage Dealer Group. Find your next Chevy, Toyota, or Acura dealer and drive off in under 60 minutes, or they'll make your first car payment. Also brought to you by the Hard Rock Casino in Northern Indiana, Las Vegas style gaming, just 30 minutes from Soldier Field, exit 6, right off of I-80-94. All right, so yesterday ended up doing a show on Fox. We're preparing for it. NBA Finals is on. We got to see enough of the first quarter to see Tyrese Halliburton go down with his game 7. It sucked. He was balling, which seems to always be the case whenever one of these injuries happen. Kevin Durant was killing the Toronto Raptors, and all of a sudden the Achilles goes. We saw the same thing. And there was a conversation that was had between me and our teammate Carmen DeFalco about, is this going to get to a point? Because we see it all the time. Strained calf leads to Achilles.
Yeah.
Seems like every time.
It's the Jason Tatum. It's the new forearm tightness in Major League Baseball where you get it, you're going to get Tommy John.
Are we going to get to a point where either players or teams are going to say it is okay for you to not play this game? Because that seems to be the discourse today. Should Tyrese Halliburton not have played? And Carm was actually on the side, shocked me a little bit, of it's going to get to the point where these players are going to say, I'm not costing myself all of next year for today's gratification.
If you tell me that it happened, like you get a calf strain in January, take 3 weeks and we'll see you when you're ready to go. But that's the reality. Like a calf strain now, you're going to risk tearing your Achilles. If you rest on it until it's healthy, you're not going to play for a month. Like think about Christian McCaffrey in the NFL.
Yeah.
McCaffrey had a calf strain. We didn't see him until November. It takes a long time to get healthy and to completely eliminate the risk of an Achilles tear. So if it happens in January or it happens in a first round series, I could see players checking out. But the fact that the Halliburton one is what's driven this discourse, stop. It was game 7 of the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
He could play the rest of his career at full health and never get back to the NBA Finals. This is all you play for in your career. You're going to play that game.
Yeah.
Risk be damned.
I think what's funny about this to me is this is the difference between people that play sports that are at the highest level and the fans that watch. This is a fan discourse, and I get it. Kendrick Perkins is the one that also brought up, hey, don't play. So he's somebody who has played. But for most players, this is not a sport. This is not something I do for fun. Like most of us do. We go pick up a basketball, play pickup ball. This is their life goal. This is their dream. This is everything that you worked your entire life for this moment, you would have to kill half of the players that you would try. I would love to see a conversation between Rick Carlisle and Tyrese Haliburton that says, you're not in the lineup because I'm worried about your Achilles. And yes, maybe it is the conversation that needed to be had, but I guarantee you the words that would have been coming back from Haliburton could not have been aired on regular television.
It's also just, it's never going to happen. In the NBA Finals, you're going to play.
Yeah.
It's what it's going to be.
I think even in a, let's bring it to the sport that we talk about here. In football, you only get so many years. Is there ever that moment where you may see, right? Christian McCaffrey is a great example of it. I got a calf strain.
But again,
I'm going to a Super Bowl. I'm going to risk it.
That happened in August.
Yeah.
So in August, you can have the like, I'm not going to play these regular season games. If it happens in the AFC title game or the NFC title game, and you have a calf strain, but you have a trip to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You're telling me somebody's going to sit out the Super Bowl because they might tear their Achilles? The whole reason you play is to go to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You may never get back there.
Dan Marino.
If you're in an NFC title, you may never get back to that.
Michael Vick.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's facts.
Maybe Jared Goff. No,
Michael Vick. Michael Vick got to the NFC title game. I don't think he ever made it past the second round again.
You're telling me next year if the Lions are in the NFC divisional and Jared Goff's got a calf strain, he's going to not play so that he can save himself for a future season? They may never get back there.
Yeah. It's such an interesting conversation and discourse that we're getting today, and I'm shocked by it, honestly. The amount of people that are like, well, no, you shouldn't have played because of what the outcome was. And
there's this weird fascination from sports fans now where they want to pocket watch professional athletes.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you're going to risk your career earning. What do you care? If you have a chance to win a title, they've made more money than you're going to see in 10 lifetimes. Yeah. What do you care? Why are we pocket watching professional athletes?
Even if he comes back and they're like, we're going to sign you to what is acceptable for a veteran coming off of injury at as low as we can, that's still more than $5 million.
Yeah.
He's doing fine. I don't know. To me, I thought that was an interesting conversation that I saw pop up after the injury. I think now it's easy to say. The only thing that I can give any credence to is it does feel like a guarantee at this point.
It does.
Strained calf, you play on it, your Achilles is going to go.
Yeah.
Like that is, I don't know how many, what the odds are the other way, but we've seen a lot of Achilles and ACL tears this season.
It's weird how much it's happening and how much it's happening to young players.
Yeah.
Like it's just, it's odd. Something has to change or will be looked at. I've seen, like, Nick Van Axel said, you got to go back to high-top shoes, protect your ankles.
Well, I do think that, but that's just how I play. I don't know how they play in low tops.
That plays a part, for sure. But, Kobe started wearing the low tops, and everybody followed Kobe, and Kobe blew his Achilles, and now Achilles tears feel regular.
It does. It does.
A lot of people have said maybe the NBA needs to shorten the season. They're never going to do that. And then the other one is guys play year-round now. That's, they never rest their bodies. And they're playing AAU ball from the moment they're 10 years old. So it's basically from the time they're 10 to the time they retire, they're playing basketball year-round.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people look at Michael Jordan as like, well, Michael Jordan played year-round. One of the greatest freak athletes of all time. Two, didn't play basketball for most of his life. Like, was a baseball player. You didn't play baseball year-round back then.
And the AAU circuits didn't exist.
Exactly.
And now they're
completely
like
different.
Financially viable. Yeah. It's just a totally different world.
It's weird to see how much – you would think playing more would be better for you because you're getting better at the game, but I feel like in baseball, in basketball, we see a ton of that. In football, you don't get that as much because half of the country can't even play in half of the year. You know, like the down south, J-Mac always talks about, you know, playing 7-on-7 ball. They play year-round down south. Up here, you're taking winters off.
Yeah.
We don't have anything for you. So we'll see what ends up happening.
That's why all the good baseball players come from California and Florida.
Does make sense. Does make quite a bit of sense. Let's keep this thing moving along. Let's talk a little bit of Bears football here. Thought that was an interesting topic to start. Let us know your thoughts in the comments below. Do you think that players will ever get to a point where it's okay to sit out a game as important as a game seven because of what it does seem like is a guarantee that will happen. You will tear your Achilles off of that serious calf strain. Let's talk about some of the players, though, on this team, healthy Chicago Bears team is winning this 6 weeks. I love this topic idea that you brought up, breaking down each position group by the players and just going through it, starting off with the defensive line here, because you've had a big issue with the D-line and the lack of improvement that the Bears have focused on with this defensive line. Let's start off with the obvious name. Big money brought in. Dio Odengbo is the probable surprise. Paid him a lot of money. Sure. Know what he's going to. Seems like you know what he brings. Doesn't seem like great pass rush numbers. Is that a move that may come back to bite the Bears in the butt?
Whether it'll come back to bite them, I'm not going to. Who knows? I mean, look, Eric did a good job, broke this down for us in a way. Instead of just going player by player, we can kind of do a more broad short topics.
Yeah.
So the way he broke it down was for the defensive line, biggest strength, biggest weakness. For me, the biggest weakness is edge. And Dio's a part of that. It's a more expensive version of DeMarcus Walker. If you look at the production over their careers, you're going to get the same out of Dio as you got out of DeMarcus Walker. And you're paying more money for it. And if we're just honest about it, Montez Sweat wasn't good last year. And I still look at that position, edge rusher specifically, as probably the biggest weakness on the entire roster. You don't have a superstar. There's no elite guy. And you're paying one to be elite, so he has to be.
Paying two, honestly.
Well, no. I mean, $15 million for Dio, that's middle market edge rusher now. Like, people look at the contract and say he's a $40 million player on the edge. He's got to have elite production. It's not top end edge rusher market pay. It's not. The top guys now are getting $30 million a year.
Yeah.
So when I see $40 million over three, whatever it is, and he's making $15 million a year, he's getting about league average for an edge rusher. And he has maybe a little bit below average, if not league average production.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get what I pay for. I wanted more. I'm somebody who wanted more than league average on the opposite end of Montez Sweat.
Yeah, last season, 18 total tackles, 4 sacks, 10 assists. Did get the start last season for the first time. Was a better pass rusher than we had seen in his past. I think what was interesting was, especially with the Bears' weaknesses last year, you talk about biggest strengths, biggest weaknesses, did the run defense get better? I don't know if we can say that it did. I like Grady Jarrett. I like him from a penetrating style. I think 40% of 100% Grady Jarrett is going to be a lot of fun if you do that waves, right? And you've got Jervon Dexter and him next to each other. I don't know what happened in last season, but I don't think that you added anybody to this defense that really adds a dominant force to the run defense. The hope is that you get the production back of 2 years ago, which oftentimes does not come back.
Well, I think so. My biggest strength for the defensive line is the interior, and that's not going to shock anybody. But it's where they put the most of their investment. It's where they went in the draft with Shamar Turner. You got Grady Jarrett. You bring back a healthy Andrew Billings, who was kind of the key to having a productive run defense a couple years ago. The X factor is going to be, can Zach Pickens like exist?
We're in a bad spot if that's the X factor.
Can Zach Pickens be remotely viable? But the one thing I'll say about the interior is they have enough pieces now. It feels like you can rotate and try to go at your opponents in waves.
Yeah.
Keep your guys ready to go. Nobody's going to have to play three downs. You're going to be able to rotate people out. That's what adding Grady Jarrett does. I don't think you're getting some high-impact player. You're not getting the Grady Jarrett of 5 years ago. He's long in the tooth.
Yeah.
But you don't need to rely on him to be a three-down D tackle, assuming everybody stays healthy, which having depth helps with that.
That's a big assumption, yeah.
But having depth helps with it. I mean, even with Shamar Turner, he was injured in his senior year at Texas A&M. The production went down. You hope that he can be kind of a key piece here as a rookie. But having a lot of depth and the ability to rotate pieces, it's going to let Dennis Allen have toys to play with. And I think that helps for the rush defense and the interior of the line.
Does Dennis Allen himself fix some of these issues? I think that's a conversation you have to have when new coaches comes in. We saw what going from Sean Desai to Vic Fangio, big shock, did for that Philadelphia Eagles defense.
Yeah, of course.
And even what it did here when Vic came to Chicago, improving the coach will improve the team. I like Matt Eberflus as a defensive coordinator. I've always loved Dennis Allen as a DC. I think he's just – he is – now in that mode where it's like he can become Spags. He can become Vic Fangio, one of those top guys who is a career defensive coordinator. How much of an impact do you think he has on this defensive line?
A lot. They're not going to be in base defense much. I think you're already going to get improvement elsewhere because you won't see the Tampa 2 that was just Matt Eberflus was addicted to it. But Dennis Allen's a guy who loves nickel. You know, he loves having Kyler Gordon. He's going to get creative, bringing simulated pressures.
You're going to have Brisker down close to the line a lot, probably.
You might look at plays where, when I talk about a simulated pressure, if you don't know what it is, you might have five down linemen.
Yeah.
Only three of them rush. And the pressure is actually coming from a nickel corner or a linebacker or somewhere where you would figure that guy's dropping in coverage. Oh, no, actually Grady Jarrett's dropping in coverage and we have a blitzer off the end that we weren't prepared for. You'll see a lot of simulated pressure, I think. You're not going to get a ton of base defense. I think there will be times because of the personnel that you see three gap defenders and one edge rusher. And I'm somebody who wants another edge. But if Dennis Allen's going to run this defense in a way where, look, we're going to line people up in the gaps and just have one edge and try to generate our pressure from the interior, has to work.
Yeah.
That seems like the game plan. But if it works, then I'm not going to sit here and bitch in week 10 that you don't have a second edge rusher. I won't do it.
Yeah.
Because as long as it works, then we're good. It's just not the way I would have built a defense. But for him to call it, I think he has the toys he wants.
That's what's going to be interesting too, right? I think especially looking at, of course, the pass rush is going to be important. Getting to the quarterback is always the biggest thing. But if you can't stop the run, we saw it last year. Even Arizona basically was like, we don't run the football at all, but we're going to turn around and hand this ball off 30 times and just gut you on that. Like, to me, I wonder what that is going to look like from the interior presence, because that was a spot where they attacked a ton last season. Even when Andrew Billings was out there, it wasn't very effective. Like, that's the part where I wonder if Grady Jarrett, Shamar Turner, maybe giving Jervon Dexter and those guys a little bit of a break will help in that regard, because that's the part we didn't see. You bring up Zach Pickens. Like, there was no backline guys. We ended up going and getting who's old boy we added from the Browns? And I can't think of his name. Nick. I don't remember his name. That tells you how impactful he was.
Made me draw a blank on it.
That tells you how impactful he was. I wonder if Dennis Allen calling that defense, especially with those interior pieces, improves that run defense enough to make it to where the edge pressure actually means something in the pass plays.
Yeah, but the key is, again, like, you need to keep Andrew Billings healthy, and Jervon Dexter has to keep improving. He's kind of the key to all of this for me. Because I've been hard on Dexter. He hasn't gotten enough pressures. He was ranked outside the top 40. I think he was 60th in pressures, raw pressures in the NFL last year.
Yeah.
He's not Jalen Carter. He's never going to be Jalen Carter. He's not some high-impact difference maker. But he graded out as a top 25 interior defender in the NFL by PFF. He's not a bad player by any means. If he's healthy and he keeps growing and he keeps developing, he's not going to be an all-pro. He's probably not going to be a pro bowler, but can he be that piece in the middle of the line that just kind of makes everything work? Can he be the engine of what you want to do from the interior? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And can Grady Jarrett help mentor him along and also be the depth piece that gives him breaks when he needs them? Because I can't have him on the field for every snap. He's not capable of doing that.
Yeah. See, that is the one thing I wonder. And I think Jervon, to me, there has to be a bigger step this year. When I look at Jervon Dexter this season, I mean, success for him, I think, has to be an uptick in your pass rush win rate yet again. And you have to be around similar sack numbers to what he had last season, maybe getting a couple more, but you're not going to see a ton of sacks from the interior. I'm not expecting the end of the world for Jervon Dexter, but I do think the one thing is I need that leadership to be where it's been this offseason. To me, Jervon has proven to be the leader of this defense. He's the one getting the defensive linemen together. He's the one going out there and telling everybody, hey, we got this workout thing happening. Let's all get together and make this work. And when you do that while improving your game, I think that just makes everybody around him better. Jervon last season had 6 sacks in the season, 33 solo tackles, 13 assisted tackles, a better pass rusher than he was in the run defense. I think that's for everybody across the defensive line. But to me, if you can get him to that point where he's the leader of this defensive line, which he didn't have one last season, and he's giving you numbers like this, I think you've got your new era Akeem Hicks of this defense where, very much like you said, he's not all-pro, he's not Pro Bowl every year, but he's somebody that you have to count as a force on this team.
He's somebody you can rely on. Like, I think it's up to him this season. Last year felt make or break for him, and I think it was a lot more make than break. He showed a ton of improvement, and he dealt with a lot of adversity with the injuries that happened, lack of consistency, who he's playing next to.
Yeah.
This year, it's up to him to prove he's irreplaceable. And if he can do it, then yeah, you're looking at the next Bears defensive tackle who will be here for 6-7 years after this.
Yeah.
And that'd be awesome. That's what we all want for him. But no, I don't think it's going to ever elevate to being what Jalen Carter could be or even close to it. Nobody lives in that stratosphere. Like, it's he can be one of the top 7 to 10 interior defenders in the NFL. That's probably his ceiling.
And with Dennis Allen here, like, I think you can do a lot with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, you can go a long way with that kind of
being
player.
A top 10 player at any position in the NFL means you're incredible at what you do.
Yeah.
It just, you're not going to be an all-pro, you're not going to be a Pro Bowler, but you can be the key piece of a defense, the linchpin that makes everything go.
Yeah, let's see if Jervon proves us wrong. I want to see him be one of those top five pieces in the NFL. I think if he can get one more step, if he has one more step like he had last season, we are probably talking about one of those top five guys.
I just like to see the pressures go up. That's it.
Yeah, definitely need to see more
of that. That's for everybody on the line.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Let's have this conversation here because I think that when you talk about a guy like Jervon, you know, it's great to see what he did, but the focus on this defensive line is Montez Sweat.
100%.
Highest paid player, the guy who's supposed to be the leader of this D-line, seems like that's shifting a little bit. He's a leader more in action than in words alone, but we didn't see enough action on the field last season, and even Montez said that. It's why he wanted to show up and be there for some of the non-mandatory parts of camp. What does a successful season look like for Montez Sweat to you?
I'm going to set the standard high. I need you to be top 10 in pressures, and I need you to have double-digit sacks. I'm paying you top 10 edge rusher money. I need you to have top 10 edge rusher production. And if you don't, then hit the bricks. Sorry. Like, it feels make or break for Montez Sweat this season in Chicago. It does. And make is an extremely high bar that he has to clear because when you get paid elite money, I need elite production, period. If he can be top 10 in pressures and he can get double-digit sacks this season, this will be a very good Bears defense. If he doesn't, it might be a lot more of the same where you're watching quarterbacks with way too much time sitting in that pocket able to diagnose, and you're watching a running game that's able to rip you apart a little bit. Like, it all comes down to him.
Yeah,
and it has to be top shelf.
I think double digits is the minimum. You know what I mean? Like, the pressure I want to see, I think that there was a lot of almost sacks that you could say Montez got that maybe don't go down as pressures or count as pressures on the book. But, like, the almost sacks don't do it for me. Like, I get it. I want pressure from my interior. The edge guys are paid to bring down the quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's what I need to see Montez Sweat do. And
the effort has to be there, too.
Yeah.
People keep looking at last year and saying, you know, he was hurt. He was playing through injury. You're giving him excuses. He's a pro player. Finish plays. If you have an opportunity where you see a quarterback, you see their jersey, and you got a clean rush, end it. Finish the play. I'm paying you top-level dollars to be a premium edge rusher in the NFL. And if he doesn't pull this off, then it will be looked at as a mistake of a signing.
Yeah.
Because
trade.
At the time. Well, maybe not trade. I mean, yeah, honestly.
Yeah,
it was
trade.
Impactful
it
in the year they did
extra
it.
Wins?
It's just at the time of the signing, you could have made the argument, and I did. He was never an elite edge rusher at any point in his career, and you gave him elite money because you had to.
Yeah.
Now it's up to him. You have to be the guy that you traded for. And if he's not, that'll be all, man. That'll be it at the end of this season for him.
I think Montez is – he's also in this weird spot where we know Dennis Allen does not – want defensive linemen that are 260 pounds.
Yeah.
He said it. Montez Sweat fits that. But the one caveat that he gave was, I love power over pounds. You got to show the power.
Yep.
You got to be that guy who, as crazy as it is to say, you got to be the Khalil Mack of this team. You have to be the guy who everyone is focusing on, to where we have to look at it and be like, well, okay, they're triple teaming him. But also, you've got the rest of the defensive line. Like, you shouldn't be getting double teamed this year. It should be one-on-one opportunities. It should be opportunities for you to get home to the quarterback, because we did bring in Grady Jarrett, who, no matter what, they're not going to not pay attention to him. He's still good enough that we have to focus on him. Javon Dexter had enough of an uptick last year. They're going to focus on him. Dio Dangbo's going to have to prove a little bit on that opposite edge. But to me, like, this is a year where you're probably not going to see Montez Sweat dealing with nearly as many double teams as he was dealing with last season, dealing with nearly as many, nearly as much focus as he was dealing with last season, because it got to a point where he was kind of the only person we were worried about. And then he does get banged up, and so we're not even as worried about him anymore. Like, this season, you have to take advantage of the fact that there is opposite pressure coming from somewhere on this defensive line, which there wasn't last season.
But we hope there's opposite pressure. Like, I hope Dio Dangbo is better than DeMarcus Walker was. I don't know that he will be. Yeah. They've had the same stat line basically throughout their entire careers. So I hope that that's the case. And again, it's all going to come down to the health of the two guys in the middle, Javon and Billings.
Yeah.
If they're both healthy, then, yeah, you will see a lot of solo pass sets. You'll see more individual opportunity and less double team. But you have quantity. You went out and got depth. You have quantity. I don't know that there's a lot of quality. So if one of these guys gets hurt, well, then you have middle-tier defensive linemen in a lot of double-team scenarios.
Yeah.
Because you will be able to focus more on those guys. If Billings goes down, then it's just the same Javon we saw a year ago who will get neutered by double teams. If Javon goes down, can Andrew Billings really hold up the defensive line by himself?
Yeah.
Grady Jarrett is nice to have as a depth piece, but I can't have him on the field for three downs because he's just not that guy anymore.
Yeah. So that's what I wonder, though. I do wonder if we will see more of that. And I don't think you'll see three downs play out the play, or drive out the drive for Grady Jarrett. But I do wonder if it's, hey, we're going to swap this thing in and out. We're going to platoon swap this. Grady, we need you to go 100% here. You're going to have the next two drives off, but we need you to get to the quarterback here.
Yeah.
Like, I do wonder how much of a benefit that's going to be to Grady Jarrett's game, especially with Dennis Allen in there, because I think that's where Shamar Turner steps up. I think that's where having Andrew Billings and having Javon Dexter does make it easier. You can kind of just say, this is your time to pinpoint in and do what you do best. Go 100%. I don't need you keeping anything in the tank right now.
Yeah, you can keep his tank a little more full if you rotate him in and out. Definitely. He's not going to have as many pressures as he did a year ago when he was even outside the top 60, I want to say, Grady Jarrett last year, because he's just not going to play as much.
Yeah.
But maybe you get better reps because he's not going to play as much.
That's my hope. That's what I think the Bears are hoping for here. You bring in the leadership, you bring in the accountability, although maybe you had that here the entire time. But last season, I played 744 snaps in total. He had 34 pressures, which was 30th among defensive interior players. And he had 35 tackles in total, which was 14th among defensive interior players.
744 snaps, too. That's like probably 70% of the snaps on the season.
Yeah.
I don't need him playing that much.
No. If he's living around like the
500 snaps,
I was gonna say like 450. Like, if he's living around that range, I think that's what you're getting the most out of this contract that you paid him for. Let's finish it out with this. Because of where the defensive line is, a lot of question marks on the D line. If there was a change you could make, that's a realistic change.
Sure.
What would you want to see the Bears do to this D line?
Trade for Trey Hendrickson.
You think that's still realistic?
More realistic now than I did a week ago. A lot of stuff came out over the weekend. Bengals are still lowballing him. It sounds like $28 million is the number they want to live at. If you're not getting it north of 30, you're not signing him. And he has threatened a full holdout. So it's either they're going to figure it out or they're going to trade him. And if they want to trade him, I want the Bears to be the team to get him. Now, I can't make the Bengals make him available.
Yeah.
And it has gone on long enough that you do question, is he really available, or are they going to just hash this out, have their fight,
and
by the time camp starts, they'll figure it out. So another option is going and getting a veteran edge rusher. And there are guys out there. I've heard Von Miller's name. I'm pretty good on that. He's washed, for one. And for two, he's got some problems off the field. Just not a guy that I feel like you need to go pick up.
Yeah.
But Matthew Judon's out there. Falcons said thanks, but no thanks. He's floating on the market.
It's weird. That was a weird, like, quick pivot on Matt Judon. Like, I get it, or what it was supposed to be last year when, remember, Ryan Poles was trying to go after him. But, like, that was a really weird trade to make to just be like, we're done.
Yeah. That's reality in the NFL, though, because you pay top dollar for somebody and they don't give you top-level production. It's why the Packers traded Jair Alexander.
Yeah.
You made him the highest-paid corner in football. He can be on the field for, what, 7 games?
7 games each of the last 2 seasons.
Bye.
Yeah.
We can't pay you this money anymore.
Yeah.
So I'd look at Matthew Judon. I'd look at Za'Darius Smith, who the Lions kind of just kicked to the curb too. And the Lions likely will bring Za'Darius Smith back. But if they don't, hurt them more. Weaken them more by getting the guy that they brought in to be opposite Aiden Hutchinson. So there's options out there that are realistic. And Judon and Za'Darius Smith, even cheap.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, there are options, again, that, like, I look at Judon as a good option, but one where it's, okay, is there a reason he's out there? We saw it.
He's also there a is little a reason long he's in the out there.
You know what I mean?
And underperformed.
Za'Darius Smith, he's the one that I have a tough time with because I look at last year and it's almost, he's the only dude that you brought it. What was he supposed to do?
Yeah.
On that defensive line. What's he going to look like next to Aiden Hutchinson? I think that's... that he probably looks like a very different football player.
He looked okay next to Myles Garrett.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a very different football player probably than what we saw last season. The one thing that with the Trey Hendrickson one is if you're going to go out and make an addition anyway, if that's in your mind, don't swing small. Don't go for a single on this one. You've got the cap space. You've got the opportunity. And clearly, based on how Caleb Williams was talking this weekend and how Ben Johnson has been talking the entire time, you're not planning on saving anything in the tank for 3 years down the road. You're not planning on getting 3 years down the road and going, well, now we've got all these draft picks and all this money to spend because we're still trying to reset this thing. You're trying to win now.
Yep.
Caleb is talking good cash money, you know what, right now. You got to hit the ground running. You know what helps with that? Other quarterbacks being on the ground. Trey Hendrickson helps with that. I think he would be an interesting one. I do agree with you that because of, you know, where this has gotten to, it may not work out. Here's one that every day that goes by, I think gets a little bit more plausible, even though I don't know if the Bengals will allow it to be possible. I wouldn't have drafted Shamar Turner. But when April 5th gets here, there's an opportunity for him to possibly...
Oh, you said Shamar Stewart.
Shamar Stewart. I'm sorry, I said Shamar Turner. Shamar Stewart. There's an opportunity for him to...
August 5th.
August 5th. Opt out or basically tell them, I'm not signing. I can either go back in the draft or you can trade me and get draft capital from me. And every other team, if he goes back into the draft, can draft him next year, except for the Cincinnati Bengals. Yep. So you would basically lose him for nothing. Every day that goes by and with him dug in and coming out publicly and saying they want to win arguments, it is hurting how much it's going to cost to really get him out of that situation if he doesn't want to be there. And I think if you're looking at Trey Hendrickson, why do you want to be there?
So if the Bengals called and said, we'd give you Shamar Stewart for your first-round pick next year, would you do it?
I don't even know if we're at first-round pick range anymore.
That's what they spent on him.
I know it is. but you've kind of shot yourself in the foot because literally your option is pay him whatever he's saying I want to be paid. Lose him for nothing or get something for him. I think you're starting to see draft capital go the other direction, and that's why I would be intrigued by it if I am the Bears. For a first-round pick, but if you call me and you say, we want next year's second.
I'd do it.
Done.
Yeah, I'd do it in a heartbeat. Well, I think it's interesting. So what he wants is fully guaranteed money, and the Bengals are like working on a thing where they won't guarantee the money to the second-round picks.
Yeah.
So he's trying to work this out. He says they're more interested in winning arguments. And you brought up the August 5th thing. They can trade him up until August 5th. After August 5th, yeah, he can say, I'm re-entering the draft in 2026. He's not going to do that. You won't take a year off of football. You won't be a first-round pick again. There is another option that I read about, which would be stunning and I think unprecedented. He could re-enter college.
How? Now, see, I didn't know this one, and I had seen that out there, but how?
I was reading this in Pro Football Talk. Mike Florio put it out that if you seek legal action against the NCAA, there is a process by which he could re-enter college and go spend another year in college and re-enter the draft in 2026. He also has the option after August 5th, he could opt out and go play in Canada.
That I knew. The Canada one I knew. Going back to college is interesting because do you go back to the college you went to or do you switch it? How does that work?
It seems very implausible, and I don't know what the whole legal process is. Yeah. It was just an option that was floated. But yeah, it's basically like if they're not going to come to terms with Shamar Stewart and he's going to refuse to sign, then they will not have him.
Yeah.
And so until August 5th, if I'm a GM, I'm getting on the phone and going, I'll flip you a second-round pick for Shamar Stewart right now.
Yes.
And just get this headache off. You'll be done with it. You can give him to us. We'll give you bonus draft capital. We'll take care of the guaranteed money. All good. Now, Cincinnati probably won't do it because they obviously wouldn't want the precedent set of another team doing the thing they wouldn't do to secure a player.
Well, theirs is going to a different place. I think the fight that a lot of teams with second-round picks are having is the guaranteed money fight. Theirs is like, we'll give you the guaranteed money, but basically if you do anything that we deem like not helpful to the team, we take it all back. That's not what other teams are doing.
We're at a real flashpoint here where second-round picks are fighting for a little more control over their professional futures. And NFL teams don't want to give it to them. And it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out.
Slot the whole draft. The entire draft should be slotted. There should be, and maybe if you get to the sixth or seventh round, you should. But the entire draft should be, we shouldn't be having arguments on what a contract is. If you're taken with this pick, amount of money, this is what you get.
I might be wrong on it, but I think the salary is what the salary is. It's just the stipulation over the guarantees.
Yeah.
And a lot of the second round picks are fighting for, I want my contract to be fully guaranteed. I want that money.
Yeah.
And teams are like, we can't do that.
Which
I lean heavily on the side of the player in this argument, by the way.
Yeah.
You get drafted in the second round and you want guaranteed money. I don't see what the issue is. I would want guaranteed money too. Why do NFL teams get to be cheap all the time?
I side on the side of the player, but I do get the pushback on it saying, well, you weren't a first-round pick. That's for first-round picks.
But how silly is that? If you're selected at 32, then you get fully guaranteed money. But if you're selected at 33, well, it's the second round now, so you don't. You don't get a fifth year.
I mean, how fair is it that I came in a step and a half behind Usain Bolt, but I'm the second fastest man in the world?
I know, I get it.
There is that, and I think that
it's just funny to me that pick 33 gets treated the exact same in a contract negotiation as pick 64.
Yeah. That I get, but I do think it is, I mean, there are lines to it, which is why to me it should be slotted. I don't care if it's fully guaranteed or not. Like, I guarantee the contract. The first two picks, 33 and 34, ended up getting fully guaranteed contracts, which started all of this. But to me, like, I think where the Bengals have gone to, this is a completely different conversation than what the rest of the league is doing, and they're trying to take it way too far in my mindset. And what's making it worse and what seems to me to be making this actually possible and plausible is if I'm Shamar Stewart, that's going to kill me. Now I almost hope the Bears don't trade for him so that I don't mix this up all year. If I'm Shamar Stewart and I see a dude that had 35 sacks in two seasons fighting for a contract that's fair, I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
I don't want to play here.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a part of this organization.
Well, that's the whole point of this, like the long way around of saying, if there's anything that I can change on the defensive line, I'm going to try to take advantage of the Bengals being a shit show.
Yes. Yes. That is the big change that we're looking for here. Can the Bengals keep effing it up to the point where the Bears get a benefit out of it? It'll be interesting to see. Let us know how you guys feel in the comments below. I thought that was okay, computer. We don't need that right now. I thought that was a interesting topic to bring up, the Shamar Stewart one, because I keep thinking it's not going to happen because I don't think it's ever happened.
It seems so implausible.
But the Bengals are dumb enough to actually make it happen.
They're finding ways to make new things happen.
They're going to end up having to trade the second best pass rusher in football, probably.
Or the guy they drafted in the first round. Like, it's unbelievable.
Let us know what you want to see the Chicago Bears do in the comments below. We'll be down to talk with you guys as well. As always, hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. For Shay Norling, ladies and gentlemen, it's your boy Pat the Designer back at it again. That was a riveting football conversation.
It was.
Still the same time next week.
Yeah, of course.
That's what they say about the Chicago. Right now. One love. Peace.